City. It's your man, Big Pat, the voice of your Charlotte Hornets, and you're listening to the All Hornets Podcast Network, presented by Sports Illustrated.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to another episode of The Vault. I'm your host, James Plowright. Joining me, as always, after a little week off, Chase Whitney. Chase, how are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. We're getting pretty busy here with work. But, I it's nice to note that every once in a while we do a podcast where the time lines up where it's light out in England when you're recording. So it's good to know that, like, the sun is out where you live, because most of the time it's just really dark. And it's good to know that there's some sun shining through the windows there still.
It's pitch black here. I don't know what you're talking about.
Is it really?
Yes.
Is that your light? Oh, that must be your light in the background.
Oh, yeah. No, it's completely. It went dark here like an hour and a half ago. It's dark at 4 o'clock now.
There we go.
So.
All right. Well, then we cannot confirm that the sun ever comes out where James lives then. Yet again, we're back in the dark.
Okay. Well, you know what? Your observation there has gone about as well as the Hornets season so far.
yeah, true.
Joining us this week, Matt Issa of SB Nation NBA, of Opta Analyst, of Fansided, of Basketball News, of Forbes Sport. Matt, is there anywhere that I've forgotten that you do not write, podcast, or talk about basketball?
No, I think you got all the bases. I mean, I talk about it in my local dive bar, but I don't think anybody wants to hear me talking about it there. Yeah, what's up, guys? It's good to be back on. It's been a while. We're on a new platform. Lots changed.
It has. A lot has changed. New podcast network, new platform. We've boosted things up a little bit on our end. And Matt's joined us today to kind of give us a neutral viewpoint, a voice of reason here. You know, me and Chase have been watching all the games. You all know, if you listen to this, how the Hornets are doing. But we want to get somebody who follows the league as a whole closely on the podcast to talk to us about some of the issues the Hornets are facing. But most importantly, Matt, the new haircut looks good. And
thank you.
This is why we had to set the time of our podcast today around Matt's haircut, and it's looking hot. So you're all good, Matt.
Well, James, I'm sure Chase has referenced this, and I'm sure, you know, being intertwined with America for a long time, you know that this week is Thanksgiving.
Yes.
And I have to go home. My mother, she has an issue with when my facial hair, my hair on top of my head gets sloppy. So, yeah, kind of had to do it.
Got to keep your mom happy. That's important, right? That's rule number one. Keep your mom happy. So, right. The first thing we're going to kick off today is just looking at the state of the Hornets. A little bit big picture, really, in terms of what Charlotte should do from here. The Hornets are 1-12 in the last 13 games. They are currently got 4 wins, 14 losses. They are just ahead of the Houston Rockets and Detroit Pistons on wins, but are essentially at the cellar of the league. And it looks like Gordon Hayward might miss some more time. LaMelo re-aggravate the foot injury. Things are looking pretty bleak right now. And the last time me and Chase spoke, a couple of weeks ago, you know, it wasn't looking good then. It's looking even worse now. And Matt, from your perspective, someone doesn't follow the team every day, and I know you're someone who isn't a proponent, really, of tanking. What is your general view on the state of the Charlotte Hornets, and what should fans be rooting for this way in terms of building this team back up into a playoff contender?
Yeah, so I apologize for my voice. We kind of talked about this earlier. I don't have it, but so you guys have to put up with that. But I am like, okay, so I understand the math, right? The best way for a small market team to be good is to tank. It makes a lot of sense mathematically. I'm a proponent of the numbers. I use data in all my analysis, right? But it just bothers me because, like, this is a human game, and I feel like tanking really dehumanizes a like players, and like it's like we have this problem as a society where we're always looking towards the future, never enjoying the present. So it's just kind of like this never ending, self-perpetuating cycle. Reminds me a lot of the movie Chinatown. I don't know if you guys have ever seen the movie Chinatown, one of the best movies of all time. But like the whole plot point is like the villain of the movie is doing all these bad things for the sake of the future, which we don't know is guaranteed. We don't know what we have. That's completely different aside, philosophical reason why I dislike tanking despite what the numbers might say. With all of that said, the Hornets should 100% tank this season. Like, it's tough. It is tough right now. It's, you guys cannot, and I want to talk about why. I don't think LaMelo Ball is like a, you know, one of the 10 best players in the world. I don't think you guys think that. But he is so important to what this team is on both sides of the ball, mostly offensively, but he's so important, just his play style and what it unlocks for this team with him missing time, with Gordon Hayward, who is like really good at basketball when he plays, with him just not being able to stay healthy, with the Rozier stuff, the DSJ stuff, you know, the Bridges thing, all of that. It's just not your year, man. It's not going to happen. I think this is like the, and I really don't think you guys need to try to tank. Like, I think you guys are going to lose, like, not to crap on the fan base. I've watched way too many of your games at this point, way too many games. And you guys don't need to like purposefully tank in a disrespectful way. You guys are just going to lose anyways. So yeah, definitely tank this year.
Chase, how have you found watching the last couple of weeks since we last spoke? And do you agree with Matt's viewpoint there?
Yeah. So I kind of agree with Matt's stance on tanking. Like, it really is just a bad precedent to set, almost just being like, we do not care about what is supposed to be the main objective of not only basketball, but just all sports and competition in general. Like, we're not even going to attempt to win. We're not putting the best roster on the floor. Like, I don't think anyone should do that on purpose ever. But like Matt said, the Hornets didn't do that on purpose, and that's still where they're at right now. Like, they, I think a lot of this goes back to, and people have, I've forgotten this very small and easy to forget detail. So I'm not like saying people are being forgetful or anything, but Miles Bridges, that whole situation happened after the NBA draft. If that happened before, and I'm not, you know, saying that this, their basketball decision should be impacted by like the American legal system or whatever, but if that had happened before the NBA draft, who knows what type of trades they make? Who knows if they trade Jalen Duren to the Pistons? Who knows, like, if they don't move Mason Plumlee or Kelly Oubre at the draft and put themselves in a position to give all of these young players even more minutes that people want them to see them play right now, like during the season, as they're now 4-14 after what looked like it could have been a decent start, beating a couple of good teams in the beginning of the year like Atlanta and Golden State. But it's just fallen off of a cliff since then, and now it's just not – it hasn't really recovered. They're not going to have much of a choice if LaMelo doesn't come back in the next 5 to 10 games as to whether or not, you know, they're tanking this year. And it's unfortunate because it's not like – it's not really anybody's fault, and they're not doing it on purpose, but it's kind of just the best route at this point.
I think normally ownership, GMs get quite a lot of criticism for tanking. I think this is one of the points where I think they would get criticism if they don't. Like, the excuse here is on a silver platter. Everything that happened in the offseason with the coaching staff, Miles Bridges, player injuries being the biggest factor probably here at the start of the season. No one is going to blame ownership, coaching staff, if they trade a few of the expiring veterans who are on the roster. It's right there. It is the most clear and present obvious route forward. The fan base would be, I think, more frustrated. Like, you look at the schedule, the Hornets have like a really heavy home end of the season over like the last 20 games. And I can already see the situation where, you know, they're going to be trotting out their win now lineups in the last 20 games of the season and go like 10-10 and move up from being fifth in the lottery odds to 10th. And like, Steve Clifford just left the Orlando Magic situation because he did not want to be part of a rebuild. Now, that was going to be a multi-year rebuild with Orlando. But with Charlotte, I think what people are more looking for is like a one-year kind of dip down, Tim Duncan style. Obviously, that is the most successful example, so that's why it's referenced. It probably won't be that successful, but you know, my worry is Steve Clifford is not going to do that. Like, we know at this point what Steve Clifford does as a coach with when he was here with the Bobcats, when he's been with Orlando. He is going to coach his guys to win every single night. He's not going to give young players playing time. And when the Hornets decided to rebuild, they knew they had to get rid of Steve Clifford. They brought in James Borrego because they knew he would not be the coach for that. And that, this is my worry now. They're in this situation where even if GM Mitch and Jordan and ownership Michael Jordan want to kind of go down, yeah, let's move on from this year. I don't think Steve Clifford's going to be happy with that. I don't think he's going to suddenly gift playing time to Bryce McGowan and Mark Williams over Mason Plumlee and other players. I have a real concern about Steve Clifford being the right coach for this environment, and will he be able to be talked round, do we think, to viewing it differently?
I have two questions for you guys that I had in my notes. One, like, more overarching philosophical, the other about this team. Do you guys like this? I mean this like really respectfully, but how do you guys feel about Steve Clifford? Like, I felt like that was the weirdest, like, nobody ever talks about it because, like, you know, Charlotte's fan base doesn't get national attention all the time, but it's just like the weirdest, like, coaching kind of situation, like, where they were, like, interested in Mike D'Antoni. He seemed like the perfect guy to pair with LaMelo Ball. And then you just kind of end up with Clifford, who, you know, seems like a great guy. I love some of his assistants, Bayer and Corbin, but yeah, I'm just curious what you guys think about that.
You get first, Chase. I have thoughts.
Yeah. So I started the year, like, I feel not that we got like fooled by it, but when they beat the Spurs by 30 or 27, whatever it ended up being, they beat the Hawks by like 20 points, and then they beat the Warriors in overtime. I thought that there was something brewing, at least until LaMelo got back and hopefully would have stayed healthy. But now we know that that didn't happen. But yeah, it's just tough because he essentially, like, I think, especially with hindsight, every single Hornets fan would have strongly preferred that Kenny Atkinson just not bail out of the job. For whatever reasons that he ended up doing it for. And then they just had him still because it's a younger guy, somebody that presumably would be more willing to, like, grow with the team. It would only have been his second head coaching role. And that was kind of his whole thing in Brooklyn originally, was like growing with all of the young players that were impacting a team that was a little bit better than they were supposed to be there. But Steve Clifford just kind of ended up being like the fallback option because Mike D'Antoni wanted to, like, general manager powers or like to make personnel decisions. And at a certain point, like, I mean, Darvin Ham went to the Lakers. Obviously, he wasn't going to go to the Charlotte Hornets over the Los Angeles Lakers with LeBron James and Anthony Davis. Like, there were just no options left, really. And Clifford was not a bad option, but he wasn't a good one either. And now I think it's just proving, like, with what the record is going with and how the team has been playing lately, it's becoming like, hindsight is 2020, obviously, but it just makes it like even more difficult to be like in support of the long-term hire. I think in the short term, it's fine. Like, there are not that many coaches that would get what Clifford is getting out of this roster right now. But like, is that what the Hornets need? Like, it's getting to be a pretty clear, like, no in that regard, I think.
Yeah, I think judging anything that's happened this season, I'd almost just throw it out because the Hornets have just not had their guys, right? Steve Clifford's been trying to make things work with guys who are borderline out the league or some of the worst players in the league statistically, which we'll get onto later. It was bizarre. It was a Jordan move. Jordan essentially superseded Mitch Kupchak and stepped in and said, I want to bring back Steve Clifford. They still had a relationship. That's what he wanted to do. He wanted someone to bring defensive accountability. You look at this team defensively over the last 4 years under Borrego, it was terrible. That's what Steve Clifford is known for. You look at it this year, I think they're 22nd in defense, which still isn't good. But we know Steve Clifford is a good defensive coach. With James Borrego, we did not know that, right? We know Steve Clifford from his two last stints as head coach. He has got teams with not fantastic defensive talent. You know, teams built around Al Jefferson, Nick Vucevic, to play like a very good defensive level. So if this team doesn't defend well, I think you have a really clear idea that this is the players are not capable of doing it rather than it being the system. The big issue I always had with Steve Clifford is, like, one, it doesn't feel like a very long-term hire, but long-term coaches in the NBA, it doesn't happen that often in terms of a guy being here more than 4 or 5 years. But, like, how is he going to build that relationship with all these young players on the roster? Like, Steve Clifford and LaMelo Ball, I feel, viewed basketball in a very, very different way. And Mike D'Antoni and LaMelo Ball probably view it in a more similar way. And either that can kind of create like fire and ice where it's perfect because you have the flair and the creativity and the defense and the accountability where they come together and you get the best of both. Or it creates a point where you just can't get on the same page. And that was always my worry with Steve Clifford. But the problem is, I just don't think you've seen anything yet to be able to make a judgment on his ability to coach or not. But the one thing I will say, and with the team record being how it is, I mean, James Borrego got fired after getting 42 wins. If this season goes as badly as it went, well, like everyone was saying in the preseason, Steve Clifford has got a razor thin margin of error because of the situation of how he was hired, and it has not gone well. I don't think any of this is Steve Clifford's fault, but just with how they moved on from Borrego so quickly, it would not shock me if he was a casualty at some point this year, even though I think injuries are a large part to play. That would mean Jordan would have to pay another coach after paying James Borrego. So it feels like that part of it feels unlikely, and he's got a strong relationship there. But I hope the Hornets don't do that. I really do. But I just worry from if they finish bottom of the league or towards the bottom, that might be something they look for a fall guy, even though there's a bunch of situations, circumstances that go into this. I say, I'm not hoping for that. I think Steve Clifford was doing good things with the team before all the injuries hit, but I have a worry about that.
I know it's not my job to ask the questions. I was just curious because I was just, I just perplexed by the whole situation.
No,
I think Chase said it best. Where he's like, he wasn't a bad option, but he's not a good one either. I think that's like the best way to summarize it all.
Yeah. But I mean, overall, I think it's just been, I was chatting to Chase before the podcast. As someone who, you obviously have a bit more of a neutral eye, myself and Chase have a rooting interest, I would say. It's been a really hard watch this year. I've really not found the games very enjoyable, exciting. And I think fans feel that a lot as well. I think you look back to that, 2018 year, 2019, where Devontae Graham came out of nowhere and Terry Rozier was playing well and you had like young PJ Washington. Those teams were terrible, but they were feisty, they were fun because they were young and you were seeing young guys play. But you're watching like Kelly Oubre and Mason Plumlee here. You actually probably did have some expectation coming into the season. So it's not like you went into the year thinking the team were going to be terrible. You don't have the excitement of watching guys like Miles Bridges play when he was playing last year. And you're just not seeing many of the young players, JT Thor, Kai Jones, James Bouknight. You don't get to see those guys play. And when they do, they look terrible. I mean, Kai Jones, there's been a lot of excitement about Kai Jones, who's got rotation minutes in 2 games. Like, we all know Kai can do amazing dunks and can sky for offensive rebounds. It's everything else that Kai needs to work on. So I just want to say to people, I really like Kai Jones. I still believe in long term. But let's not see him do a dunk on a fast break and be like, see, Kai should be playing. Come on, it's more complicated than that. You know how much goes into a game, like screening, being able to not be turnover prone. His shot still looks pretty broken. But these young guys aren't looking good and they're not playing and the team is losing. So I don't know where fans are supposed to get excited about this. This is my challenge. The NBA season is heating up and so is the race for MVP, Sixth Man of the Year and Most Improved Player. I've already put a little bit of money down on Sixth Man of the Year. I've gone Christian Wood, Malcolm Brogdon. And the reason I've done a couple of guys is because if you get long enough odds, you can just kind of hedge your bets. If one of them wins, you make money either way. So when I'm looking to get into the action, I bet with DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the NBA. New customers can bet just $5 pre-game moneyline on any NBA team to win their game, and they get $150 in free bets if they do. Check this out. Right now, everyone can earn up to 100% boost with DraftKings stepped up same game parlays. Go to DraftKings Sportsbook app, place a same game parlay and combine multiple bets, which team will win, total rebounds, and more. A couple I've got my eye on, Nick Richards rebounds over. I think his playing time is going to go up here, and I think especially against the Philadelphia 76ers, no Joel Embiid, he's well placed to have a big game. So that's something I'm trying to pair, maybe with a couple like good matchups, maybe PJ Washington points over, Terry Rozier points over. Just have a look at the defensive matchup with both of those players. Make sure to download the app now. Sign up with promo code TBPN. Place a $5 pre-game moneyline bet on any NBA team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. That's code TBPN. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details.
Yeah, it has been very and it's like so much of it is just due to LaMelo not playing, but at a certain point, like how much of it can really fall back to the same exact thing for like the entire, like not from like a literal standpoint, because it literally is because LaMelo is not playing, but for fans, like it's like you can't go through October, November, December, January just being like, well, this is still fun, LaMelo's not playing, but so I'm gonna enjoy it either way. Like that's what makes it like not as enjoyable anymore. It's become a little bit unfortunate. And it's not to say that like the guys now like aren't trying, like they're playing their asses off. Like yeah. These are some really, really close games against teams and rosters, especially with their health, that are far more put together and more cohesive than they are. Like the overtime game or double overtime game against Cleveland, like Terry Rozier elevated to like another stratosphere in like crunch, like to hit that shot that sent it into overtime, especially like that's not something that he should have to do as often as they would need him to do it to have close games. Like that's an absurd shot to have to rely on basically just to keep the game going. Like, and that's where they've been at like the last like week part in particular, like after that Miami game, like every game has been close since they left Florida basically, but they just can't get there because they don't have the, like the guys for it. And it's just, it's unfortunate.
I think the worst part, I want to talk about the ball thing in a second, but the worst part is all these injuries are to like their advantage creators, you know, the guy, their lead ball handlers. It's not just like, you know, it's littered like, you know, throughout the roster evenly. It's like Rozier, DSJ, obviously LaMelo, Gordon Hayward, any guy who can get like any separation is, you know, injured. And it leads to, if you look at like Oubre and Washington's like true shooting percentages, they're bad. And it's, I don't think it's because they're inefficient players. I think it's just because they're, you know, 10 pick and roll ball handler reps too many, like every game. Like, you know, I think Oubre, and I have thoughts about Oubre. I have some serious thoughts about Oubre.
Come on, give us your Oubre thoughts then.
I think Oubre is going to be the Derek White of this season. I think wherever he goes, it's going to make a big difference in the postseason. Because here's my thing. Well, first of all, question. Is it just me or is Oubre – I'm not saying he's like the most effective defender, but is he not the most aesthetically pleasing defender in the NBA? Like he literally like looks like a predator, like stalking his prey in like the savannah.
Okay.
The way he like
yes. In terms
punches
of looking,
his back
yeah.
over. Yeah, the way he – I'm not saying like the result. I'm saying how like just like how he looks, the aesthetic of it. He's like got his back hunched over. He's like he gives him like that thousand yard stare. But he's a good defender. He's a good screen navigator. I think he's a little bit overburdened on this defense, but he's a willing defender. He's got a high motor. And I think I was listening to the Buzzbeat pod and they were talking about how like he's a 32% 3-point shooter who can trick teams into thinking he's a 39% 3-point shooter. And they were saying it like it's a bad thing, but it's actually like a really good thing that he can get defenders to close out on him like that. He has that. And then these ball handling reps he's getting, obviously you don't want him to be your primary ball handler. You don't want him to be your secondary ball handler. You don't want him to be your tertiary ball handler. But like he's getting like just – you're going to need somebody like that. You're going to need every – on the best teams, the teams that go deep, you have like 3-4 guys who can handle pick and roll ball, handle a session in a playoff setting. And I think that's going to be so important. These reps he's getting right now where he's getting overburdened, I think if you put that on like a really good team where he's like the 7th guy on the team that, you know, in minutes or whatever, I think that's going to be really important. And I think, yeah, that's my thing on Oubre.
I think some Hornets fans would push back about him being a good defender. I think he's been better this year, but he's generally – he looks like a toolsy defender, but he's been pretty poor, especially like foul prone, off ball, like just gets backs cut for days. I think the challenge with Oubre is he might play like this no matter where he is. Kelly could be like on the Boston Celtics, like starting next to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, and he might be taking the same like variety of shots because he just seems to kind of like play that way. And I think with this roster, it kind of fits right now because of what they need. But he'll definitely make his presence felt wherever he goes. I don't know what the impact will always be, but I agree this year for this Hornets team, he's been pretty positive.
I should have caveated with if the team can rein him in, if they can rein in,
that's a challenge.
His aggression a little bit. And I think the defensive thing, the things you're talking about, I think a lot of that's being overboard. I don't think he's built to be like your best perimeter, your best non-big man defender. But if he's like your third best non-big man defender or second best non-big man defender, I think that looks a lot better.
Okay. Let's move on now to a couple kind of debates about particular players. Nick Richards versus Mason Plumlee. The debate for the ages. Mason Plumlee starting. The season is, as we've discussed, we think the team would be best to rebuild. Can any of you give me a reason why Nick Richards shouldn't start over Mason Plumlee going forward?
I mean, I just think that the only reason I'm kind of where you guys are. I'm pro Nick Richards kind of taking the cape in that role. But I think the only thing would be like the passing. I think Plumlee's like a far better passer, and they like to run a lot of like that delay sets. And I mean, I just couldn't see Nick Richards ever executing anything like that. And I think that they're a better team in transition on offense with Plumlee, because Plumlee, I know you guys hate that. I know Hornets fans hate this, but he can grab and go. He can grab and go. It's not usually fruitful, but he can do it. And I'd much rather.
I'm with you. I think people give him way too much flack for like taking the ball and dribble. Like it's an advantage to have a guy that can grab a rebound and then dribble it up the floor. Like I'm with you on that.
You guys should have seen my mentions after I wrote an article outlining how the Hornets could extend Mason Plumlee, because he's actually extension eligible.
I'll have to go back and look at those.
The thing is, it's classic. Like people don't even read the article where I talk about how I don't think they should do it, but blah, blah, blah. But people going, oh, this guy's a joke, blah, blah. Like, just read the article. I literally say inside it, I don't think they should do it. But I was outlining the reasons why they could, in terms of if you want a veteran backup center, like free agency, you're looking like Nerlens Noel, Andre Drummond, Mason Plumlee's probably like a better fit than those guys. And that's why you would it. But anyway, I got a piece for that. I think you hit the nail on the head, Matt. With the roster as currently constructed and LaMelo out, they just need some creation in that team. Otherwise, Terry Rozier is having to do absolutely everything. And I was going to do a whole video about this, and I'm glad I didn't, saying that once LaMelo was back, I think Nick Richards might go into that starting unit because he's a much better kind of lob target with LaMelo. And you've got that creation back with LaMelo, Rozier, Hayward. And I think Richards fits better around that. Without some of those talented players, I think that's why Mason Plumlee, I think, will have a securer start. Even though we've talked about before, that second unit could really do with some of his passing. But I mean, if you look at the numbers, I've got them here. Nick Richards on the Hornets are plus 0.6 net rating. With Mason on, they're minus 11. The offense is better with Nick on the floor. The defense is better with Nick on the floor. Richards has a better block percentage, lower foul rate, a better offensive rebound percentage, lower turnover rate. He's also averaging, like, this is a big thing, he's like averaging half the deflections Mason Plumlee is. So I don't think he's as active in terms of those other areas, but he's contesting actually more shots per game than Mason Plumlee. So there's obviously a lot of areas there where Richards is outperforming Plumlee, but not in terms of defensive rebounding, assists, and creation, which is the key area for a challenged Hornets offense right now. And that's the only reason I think he might continue to start. But if I'm being honest, I'd be happy for it to happen. And I think it probably will happen at some point, either by trade, if Mitch Kupchak wants to trade Mason Plumlee before the deadline, and then they get to see what they've got in Mark Williams, Kai Jones, Nick Richards. I think that's probably the most likely way, because while he's here, I just don't see a world where Steve Clifford's going to bench Mason Plumlee, because Steve Clifford does not care what you think. He's going to try and win every game.
Yeah, I applaud him for it. And the cool thing about this Hornets team, like I said, Steve Clifford can try and win all he wants, man. It's not going to happen too many times. But I can understand where, like, you guys are, like, kind of worried because, like, you know, the guy at number one is a very tantalizing guy. And
who is that this year? I've not heard.
Yeah, he's a niche guy, a really niche guy. You know? Yeah. Only the diehards know about him. But I just
want to add on that. Everyone says tank for Victor Wembanyama. The best odds you can have to get Victor Wembanyama are 14%. I just want to remind everyone that. 14. You could lose every game this season. Fans would say, well done. They'd have 14% chance. And then, if they didn't get Victor Wembanyama, which is very unlikely, you know the same fans telling them to tank for Victor this year will be the same fans next year who go, lol, the Hornets tanked all of last year and didn't even get Victor Wembanyama. And they'd laugh at the franchise. When they're the same ones telling them, like, it's just a reality. There is an 85% chance or worse that they will not get him. And people, I don't think they choose to ignore, like, the facts of that.
And James, that was remember earlier I mentioned I had two questions for you guys. The other one was, can tanking be, like, traumatic? Like, could you guys think of it as, like, a traumatic experience for the players? And, like, it does that 14% chance, does that outweigh the trauma you might inflict on the guys who, like, you know, you want to make it through the rebuild?
Well, you look at, there's just been a documentary done on the 7-59 Bobcats, which
there's a documentary.
You need to go find it. It's a 2-hour, 20-minute documentary, Matt. You'll love it. We just released a podcast earlier this week about it, where I had one of the creators on, Seth Rosenthal, came on the podcast to talk about it.
SB did it. The Secret Base guys did it.
Yes, Secret Base guys did it. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So I definitely recommend. Yeah, go watch that, and also check out our podcast with Seth. We talked to some extra interesting bits from there. So I think it can be traumatic. Yes, but then you also argue, like, Kemba Walker went through that and became an All NBA player. So it didn't stop him, but there's a lot of guys. You know, Bismack Biyombo. Maybe you argue it held him back from his career, but I think so. It can be, but I don't think this team will be bad enough that it will be a traumatic tank. Chase, what do you think?
Yeah, I agree that it won't be that bad, especially if LaMelo, Hayward, whoever comes back, and there's a couple of high-level players to watch every night. But I do think from, like, a player, like, coaching staff perspective, like, can you imagine telling these guys, like, hey, like, we're not going to put in all of our effort into you guys this year, so we can get this 19-year-old kid from France to come in and take all of your minutes, and then we can give him all of the touches other than LaMelo, and then we'll be good again. Doesn't that sound good, guys? Like, that is a wild thing to, like, sincerely tell a group of players and coaches, like, and you wouldn't say it in those literal terms, but that is what you're telling them. Like, that's like, these guys are smart. They can infer, like, oh, they want to lose this year in the 1 year where, like, the top of the draft is supposed to be, like, these excellent players, or not the 1 year, but the rare year where the top three picks are all, like, number one quality guys. Like, it's just not feasible. Like, players and coaches don't think like fans, and they never, ever will. Yeah. Like,
and the vets will want
to. And fans can be right sometimes. Like, that might be the best option for the Hornets. Like, we've mentioned it many times, but the team is never going to think that.
And that's why I call it dehumanizing, man. That's why it gets at me. But yeah, you said it on the nail, Chase.
It's not a computer simulation. If it was, all NBA teams would do it. But there are real people involved, and like that, if you start to do that, like all the vets will want out. Terry is here. He won't want to be part of that. Kelly Oubre, Mason, like, and some people say, well, good riddance to Kelly Oubre and Mason Plumlee. All right, but like, and Gordon Hayward, but Terry is not going to want to be part of that. Even if he is here on a 5-year extension, absolutely not. So, yeah, you've got to understand about the message that sends and the frustrations that can create in the locker room as well. Because it's a different situation when, like, you go to Detroit, you know what you're signing up for. These players were not signing up for this in Charlotte. They didn't come into it the season with this mentality. Anything else on Nick or Mason, either of you? Or should we move on to talk about PJ Washington?
I'm good, unless you have something, Chase.
I just have one quick thought. I think my overarching reason for why Mason starts just generally is he's more physical. There were a couple of clips last night and in the Cleveland game as well. When Nick is on the floor, which goes to your defensive rebounding stat, James, the team does not box out as well. And that's like a very old man yelling at cloud thing to be like really mad about, but it matters. Like, you need to put a body on guys. Like, I'm especially looking at a clip Steve I have on my computer. Yeah, exactly. Like, he's the type of coach that really gets bothered by that and will like not start you for something like that. But I'm looking at a clip right now. 93-85 is the score. 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter for anybody that wants to go on the NBA stats page and look it up afterwards themselves. Bradley Beal takes a mid-range jump shot. Pause it while the shot is in the air. Every Hornets player is standing still with their arms at their sides, except for Dennis Smith Jr., who is the farthest away from the basket, and Gordon Hayward, who is contesting the shot. Nick Richards is just looking at the rim. Kristaps Porzingis is flying in from behind him, like about looking like he's about to try and tip slam it. Jordan Goodwin's crashing the boards. Bradley Beal is like in a ready stance in case the ball bounces to him. Like, this, that is like, that is very, very emblematic of like why Nick Richards is not starting. I think like that, if you wanted to pick one thing and extrapolate it over a season, that's probably why.
I'm just going to add one little nugget to that, cause I also noticed something, but I feel like it's not that he's not physical. It's like, he's like, he doesn't know how to use the physical. Like, on offense, I see him be like too physical sometimes, and he'll draw like offensive fouls, setting screens.
Actually,
I feel
like it's just like,
I think he has like, he's a strong guy. I think he doesn't know when to turn it on and off yet. He might just turn it off at the weird times, and that might play into the reason why Plumlee fouls more. But that's just me.
Yeah, I don't know if it was the exact clip you described, but I literally tweeted out a clip yesterday of Nick Richards just watching Bradley Beal shoot, and he just watched it in the air, and then Porzingis came in and got the rebound. I don't know. It could be two of those, but I clipped that exact one yesterday.
So I watched that possession made me be like, all right, I have to pause this game and pull up my screen recording thing, because I saw that possession, and then the next possession is the one that I was talking about, because it was 91-85 in your clip, and then it was 93-85. In the one that I was talking about. So it is literally back-to-back possessions. And
which is
the
so
one
bizarre.
You posted was what sparked it for me. And then I saw that one and was like, okay, I got to.
Because
I
on
to,
the
like,
offensive end, he's
this.
So physical, and he gets himself in position so well.
He's huge. He's a massive dude. Like,
but you
and
see
he's
this
a good rebounder, too.
You see this in the NBA. There's like guys like Daniel Gafford, right? Just incredible offensive rebounders. And I don't know why it doesn't always translate from offensive rebounding to defensive rebounding. And you feel like it should, but it doesn't work that way. Okay, let's move on to, before we kind of, we're going to go on to PJ Washington here. I know you guys, Matt, I know especially you've been watching a lot of PJ Washington. Up and down season, I think fair to say. Slightly different role this year. Increased usage, more off the dribble game, a little bit more creativity. Matt, you've kind of been watching a lot of PJ Washington film. What are your thoughts on PJ that you've seen so far this season, and how do you think it might play out here with Charlotte?
Yeah. The first thing, and this is finally the time I can talk about the LaMelo Ball piece and why I think he is so important to this roster offensively, is they have this team is like crazy athletic, right? If you look, I looked at some numbers, like you guys are, I think it might've changed last time I looked at it, fourth in offensive rebounds per game, eighth in steals per game, 10th in blocks per game, something like that. You're top 10, all those are all like indicators of athleticism. And you look, you have like all of those, like on paper, like rangy, toolsy guys. You use the word, James, like Oubre, McDaniels, love McDaniels. Washington is one of those guys. And I think like the reason why, so they're all these like play finisher guys, and you know, they have the ability to get out and transition and run and be so fast and blitz teams and finish around the rim. And if you look at all their efficiencies, they're all down, partially because again, somebody's got to take the on-ball load with these guys being hurt, and you know, they haven't been exposed to as many on-ball reps yet. It's a part of the learning curve, and I think this will help them later on in their careers. But LaMelo's a guy who like, he takes all that rangy, uncontrolled athleticism and he tames it, which sounds weird because he looks kind of wild himself when he's moving around the courts. But his is like, I like to call it like a calculated recklessness. You know, I think of Manu Ginobili whenever I think about it. You know, Manu Ginobili is like this crazy guy, and it, to the outside eye, it looks like he's just being wild, but it's like so calculated, and he's just so much smarter than all of us. And I think that's how it is with Ball. I think he can take all these guys and kind of weaponize them like perfectly and maximize their utility. And I think that's something that's really been hurting Washington this year. When you look at his efficiency, I think 3-point shooting is a very like volatile stat for most shooters in the NBA. And I think like for his career, he's always been like a good 3-point shooter around 37% per game or something like that. And so he's down a little bit. I think that's hurting his efficiency. So offensively, I'm kind of uneven with him. I like when they post him up on smaller guys, like quick hitting post ups where he can just, you know, one dribble attack. I wish they used him in the short roll more. I don't know why they don't. I think he's a really good short roll passer at that size. I wish they would do that with him more. I think that'll maybe come back when Ball is back and they'll run more ball screens like that. So that's where I'm at with him offensively. Defensively, I don't know. It's weird. Like, he has like moments where he can be like a good man defender. I'm thinking right now the image that's coming in my mind against the Blazers. He got matched up on Lillard for a second. He was able to stay with him, kind of force him into the help. But last night, I don't know if you guys noticed this, the Wizards started putting him in the action a lot as like the screen navigator. Maybe that's just because Kuzma, you know, is a bigger guy and he likes to handle the ball. Maybe that's why it happened more. But like, he did not do well navigating through those screens at all. He looked really stiff, did not look that fluid. I've heard like people say he's supposed to have like a little bit of versatility on defense. I don't necessarily see it. He just kind of exists. He doesn't really pop to me. I do like some of his rim protection. The team is a better paint protecting team when he's on the floor, despite them being way worse when Plumlee is on the floor, and they do share a lot of minutes together. So that's a good indicator to me that like Washington in isolation is actually like a solid secondary rim protector. But I know I'm talking a lot, but the thing that came out, I think it was earlier last week, right, is that he wants like Keldon Johnson money. Am I correct?
Yeah, the report was.
And so, like, I don't know where I'm at with that, because Keldon Johnson's also not really that good of a defender. I'd consider them probably on the same plane. Maybe Washington's got more upside to me. But offensively, like, Keldon Johnson has this really cool package where he's a great shooter, but he's also, like, a powerful driver. And I think that's just that unique skill set makes him worth money. Where with Washington, I'm just like, I really need to see what it looks like with Ball this year. Again, how he looks with him now that he has the extra reps as an on-ball guy too. But in terms of like that number, the actual number itself, the 20, 22 million or whatever, I've been trying to figure out, I don't know if either one of you guys knows what the average annual salary for a starter is, because I think he can be a starter caliber player, but I think it will. So if you pay him like 20 million a year, right, and then 2 years the cap spikes up a bunch, I think that could look like a bargain. So like, I know I said a lot and I didn't come to any conclusions, but that's kind of where I'm at with him. And I'm sure it's like similar to you guys.
Yeah, I'm as muddled as you are. Mm-hmm. You used the phrase moment twice in your monologue there. And I think it's the perfect phrase because he's a moment player. You see moments and you go, oh, he switched on to the guard. Oh, he matched up really well with Sabonis in the post. Oh, look at him pull up from three. Oh, look at him on the short roll, passing, creating. And then you watch him another night and he doesn't do any of those things. And he lacks urgency. You know, he missed a box out on Evan Mobley, I think it was in the Cleveland game, to completely blow just the physicality. He has been missed it inconsistent. I thought that was kind of down to a little bit of conditioning. He come into the year in much better shape. And I still think that is the case. But I've kind of realized it's nothing to do with conditioning. He is just an inconsistent player. And to be a starter in this league, you have to be consistent. And you never know what you're going to get at PJ Washington every night. If you tried to bet the over-unders for PJ Washington, it's exhausting. Like, you know, he is a, you know, I think it's just so fluctuates depending on matchups. It's completely bizarre. I've tried to, like, put together why does he do well in certain games and not others, and I'm just at a complete loss. And for me, I just think he will be a rotation player, because I don't think he's ever going to have the consistency to start in the league. He could be a fifth starter, but like he's not ever going to be like someone who I think you put the ball in the hands to go and do stuff, because there's just too turnover prone. Defensively, his rebounding has been terrible this year. And this Hornets team really needs rebounding. So I'm as confused as you are. I was of the idea that they had to extend him and they should have extended him before the season. I have to say I've been a little bit disappointed with what I've seen so far, even though that the peaks have probably been higher than last year, but served the lulls as well.
Yeah, and my thing is, like, I know it's common practice when you're talking about young players. You should never – and I think maybe the problem here is he might be too old for this kind of analysis now that he's, like, 24. But you should never look at, like, the entire picture, like, statistical profile, just focus on the peaks. Because, you know, young players are always inconsistent. That's part of growing up. You learn to be consistent. And if you have, like, high peaks, you'll learn to be consistently good. And if you have, like – you know, just if you're just like average all the time, you'll just learn to be consistently average. So, like, I mean, I do like a lot of the peaks. I like the idea of him. I like the idea of him, like, you know, filling the lane as balls, like, you know, storming down the court. But yeah, I'm curious. I'm intrigued. I want to see how the rest of the season goes.
One of those foundational pieces that is going to be a high level part of your rotation when you're a high or like a competing team and can make like an actual playoff push rather than like a push for the 9 or 10 seed in the play in or something like that. Like it's important to get those guys locked up because you never know when you can get them again. Clearly we're learning that right now. I think there's value in just like extending guys and continuing to give them chances, especially as like a small market team, like the Hornets, that's not reeling in anybody probably that they're going to sign for $20 million a year. And PJ, like he is inconsistent. Like there's no arguing that, but I think that, I mean, up until this year, which if it continues through the rest of this year, then it's just probably a part of who he is as a player, because like you guys said, he's 24 and this year is really the first year since he was a rookie where he's had like a consistent role as a starter. And since everyone's been hurt all year, he's pretty much been the second or third or sometimes the best player on the team the entire season. Like he hasn't been, you know, shifting in and out of being like, oh, he's the fourth option. Now he's the number one option tonight because LaMelo, Gordon, Terra, like they've all been out most of the time. So he's been dealing with it the whole time. He's still a little bit inconsistent. I'm hoping that it can work itself out throughout the year as he like gets used to these reps. Like he's never gotten on ball reps in this specific fashion where he's like, not necessarily bringing the ball up the court, but catching the ball at half court and being like, all right, guys, like I'm going to organize this. Like we're going to do something. I'm going to take the ball to the rim. I'm going to call out a set or whatever Steve Clifford is asking for. Like he's never had to do that. Like he was a starter, then he was a bench player, then he was a hybrid starter bench player when they needed a small ball five. And now he's a full-time starter again, but he's got like, I think this year before it really becomes like a tag on him as a player.
Let me just be clear real quickly, James. Like, I'm 100% like for the idea of re-signing PJ Washington. You draft, you tank, you do things like that for guys like PJ Washington. I still
exactly.
Think he's going to be like a good NBA player. I just don't know where like I'm at. When I watch young guys, I'm always trying to figure out where am I at with them, like when they're in their prime. Like, what do I think he's a top 75 guy, top 100 guy, top, you know, 150 guy? That's what I'm trying to figure out. I just want to say, like, I really want to see. I don't know if it's going to happen anymore, but I would love – I think the most vibey Hornets lineup and the one where you really see PJ Washington flourishes, him at the small ball five, Oubre, McDaniels, DSJ, Ball. Just imagine, like, the chaos. You know, DSJ loves to pressure the ball. Him is, like, your point of attack guy. You got McDaniels roaming around in the wing with Oubre, and then LaMelo just running the show in transition. I think that would really unlock all of those guys, and it would look really, really, really pretty.
Well, for a number of years, the best lineups for the Hornets were the ones with PJ Washington at center under James Borrego. And then as soon as Steve Clifford was appointed, you kind of got the feeling that was going to go away. And it has. PJ Washington's played center, I believe, I think it was one game where he played small ball five. And that was, I think, due to more foul trouble more than anything else. But I agree. That's where he like has more advantage off the dribble because he's playing against bigger, slower guys. He gets more space out on the perimeter because guys wanting to stay close to the rim. But it's just defensively, the team has struggled with that. And I think Steve Clifford would worry about the rebounding there. If he only was 7 foot, I think he'd be like a great center. But he's just like 6'7". He's pretty undersized. So I agree. I still like PJ Washington as a player on the team. I think different people can make an argument that he plays a different role And each one of those in like 3 years, I'd be like, yeah, he could be that. Like, I think he's just going to be one of those players that a little bit like Jeff Green, where like no one quite knew how to use Jeff Green or quite what his role was. And you always felt that he should be used a different way. And when he used in that way, he felt it should be a different way. I just feel like he might have a similar role as that. Okay. Moving on to our last segment. We're going to talk a little bit about some advanced stats. And I got a little quiz for Chase and Matt here, which we're going to finish with. So, and I'm going to publish this over on sihornets.com. So make sure you go have a read. Catch-all stats. I've gone through the six of what I think are probably like the best advanced analytics. So that's box score plus minus, win shares, Raptor, real plus minus, FIC, and EPM. And I have gone through all the Hornets players who've played like good minutes. So I've not included Kai Jones, LaMelo Ball in this because I just felt the sample sizes were too small. And I've ranked all the Hornets players and where they average out essentially in each one of those. And I've ranked them from first to 12th in terms of the overall rank. And this is just for this season, right? So that everything we're talking about here, this is not the statistics and this is not our thoughts of them for their career, but just this season. So we're going to run through here. I'm going to ask some questions. I'm going to throw them to you. The first question I have for you is, which player on the Hornets do you think has the best overall catch-all rank amongst those six advanced analytics? Matt, do you want to go first?
It's going to be DSJ.
Okay, Chase?
Yeah, see, that was – I was thinking it can't be someone that plays too many minutes because – that's like no stat is going to favor the Hornets over a large sample size this year, but it has to be someone that plays enough to be like impactful. I'll say Nick Richards just so we have a different answer, but I was picking between Dennis Smith and Nick Richards.
Okay. You're both wrong.
Ooh.
You're both wrong. Wow. The first overall player, in fact, I'll give you Mulligans. You can go again.
Okay. Oh no.
Go on, Matt.
McDaniels?
I would love if the answer was McDaniels, but Matt Richards. Is it Teo Maledon?
You're both wrong again.
Oh, my. Oh, wow. We're running through like the whole roster at this point.
Yeah, that's the whole.
There are only eight guys that have played
with the injuries and stuff. I can't imagine. Anybody else?
I'm going to put you out in misery with embarrassment as much as I'm enjoying this.
All right.
Kelly Oubre.
I would have been my last guess.
Yeah, no. Like, I'm telling you, maybe the catch-alls are as preferential to like really aesthetically pleasing players as
I am. Well, Kelly Oubre has an overall catch-all rank of 86. So of all players, there's 372 players who played at least the number of minutes to qualify for this. And Kelly Oubre is the best, ranking 86th.
Hey, man, Derek White. Derek White of this season, I'm telling you.
I can't wait to watch him put up 35 off of Philly's bench in the Eastern Conference semifinals or something like that. Yeah. And we'll just be sitting here like with smoke coming out of our ears. Like
that'll guarantee Doc Rivers another 10 years as an NBA.
Yeah, right.
The one that really helps him here is RPM, where he ranks 10th. 10th in the league, real plus minus, which is bizarre. Okay, next up, number two. Chase, you can go first. Well, in fact, hold on. You guys have already guessed here a few. So I'm going to run through because you've already said a couple, actually. Second is Dennis Smith Jr., catch-all rank of 92. All right, so just behind Kelly Oubre. Next is Nick Richards with a catch-all rank of 105. So you guys were close with your first two guesses. You had two of the top three. After that, we get into like a kind of a bunch of guys. I want to ask you who you think is last is my next question. So Chase, I'm going to have you go first. Who do you think is last on the Hornets in average catch-all rank?
I hate to do this. I really hate it. I think it's because he takes a lot of threes and hasn't been making them very much. Is it Terry Rozier?
Matt, your guess.
I think it's Plumlee.
James Bucknight.
Okay,
that makes sense.
This is relieving.
Tough season.
Now, of the 372 players, would you both like to guess where James Bucknight ranks on the average catch-all rank?
371. in front of Killian Hayes, beating out only Killian Hayes. It has to be that.
Although I'll go like 355. I'll give him a little buffer.
365.
Okay. So in the middle, basically.
Yeah, in the middle. You're right. You're right. The Killian Hayes and Jabari Smith Jr. and James Bucknight were at the bottom of all these lists. Like, yeah, absolutely all of them.
So I was looking at, because I was writing an article about Jason Tatum last week, and he's been, you know, shooting the lights out of the ball. His true shooting is awesome. I was trying to see where he was percentile wise in the league for some perspective. And I somehow scrolled to the bottom, and way down, last player is Killian Hayes. And then 10 percentage points higher than him as the second worst true shooting percentage was James Bouknight. And I'm like, man, because when you watch like a Hornets game, I always watch with Eric Collins as the broadcaster. He makes James Bouknight seem passable. He makes him seem passable. And so I never really thought about it. I'm just like, oh, he's doing whatever. But he's not. It's been tough. Poor guy.
I mean, he's been so bad that he's not even a topic of conversation anymore. Like, he's become boring to talk about because there's nothing to say other than whenever he touches the floor, he's a disaster on both ends. That's it.
Was it one of you guys who said that, like, he might not be, like, a good G League player?
That was the BuzzBeat guys, because I listened to the same podcast you did. But he wasn't a good G League player last year. I did a whole thread where I looked at – I watched a game with James Bucknight and did a whole video thread. And my plan was to, like, clip, oh, I'm going to try and pull out some reasons here why, you know, things he does in the G League, which suggests why he's not playing for the Hornets. This ended up being, like, a 15-clip thread from one game where he just switched off all the time and made – mistake after mistake, offensive, defensive. It was terrible.
Yeah, after the pod's over, after we're done recording, funny Noel Gillespie story.
Okay, yeah, we'll circle back on that. Right, overall, out of the 11 Hornets ranked, where did you think Terry Rozier ranked in the catch-alls? Matt, I'll let you go first.
Just the face that Chase was making. I'm gonna go with 10th. I think he's second to last.
I hate doing this to Terry. I have not stuck by Terry's side for like 5 years to do this to him on a podcast.
And Terry's been playing hurt. Let's make this clear.
Yeah,
Terry was struggling when he came back last year from the ankle. He came back pretty early, and it's very clear he's not 100%, and he's overburdened on offense, just being the focal point of like all the opposing team's defensive focus. So I don't think this is all really that fair on Terry, but he hasn't been good or efficient yet, but there's a lot of context as to why there.
Yeah, and you know, just for the listeners at home, you know, what these catch-all metrics do basically is like they rank how good you are at your specific role, and like what they're asking Terry Rozier to do is be God. And, you know, he's not good at being God. So that's why he's doing poorly. One of the better NBA players in the world. He's not that bad.
Chase, what's your overall rank? Matt,
I'll give him
10th.
I'll give him 8th. Okay. I can't.
He is 10th. Matt is right. He's 10th.
I knew he was close when I guessed him for last. Oh, God.
Rozier ranks behind McDaniels, Gordon Hayward, PJ Washington. Mason Plumlee, by the way, was 4th on the list for the advanced stats. So, yeah. And JT Thor was very close behind James Bucknight with an average catch-all rank of 356 behind James Bucknight's 365. So that 2021 draft class is not looking too hot right now with their overall catch ranks. So yeah, I'm gonna post some of this so people can see the kind of specific rankings in each. But yes, just an example there. Like the Hornets have basically 5 players in the top 200 in the stat, which just goes to show the struggles that they've had this year. And I, you know, who would have thought Kelly Oubre would have been first by advanced analytics for the Hornets this year? So credit to Kelly Oubre because he has been playing hard. He's been one of the guys who I think has been putting in a good level of effort. And he's been, you know, with very little help around him, been able to put up some semi-ish efficient offensive numbers. Yeah, so an interesting exercise there. And I appreciate you guys playing along.
It was fun. I like it. I liked it a lot.
Right. I think we have covered everything for today. Anything else either of you want to touch on? Any little nuggets of info or points you want to get out there before we get out of here?
Just one thing. I wish JT Thor got more playing time, only because I love Eric Collins calling him. What does he call him? Like the Thunder God. I love hearing
God of Thunder. I love it.
God of Thunder. I love it. So that's the only reason why I'm rooting for more PT for him, even though he hasn't been the most fruitful minutes.
No, absolutely not. And I think the last thing I wanted to get out there was that I was looking at this. I was thinking JT Thor, James Bucknight, like these are guys, even Kai Jones, guys who all picked up the sport late, right? I think they all started playing basketball at the age of like 15, 16, a lot like the most. And I think you're really seeing that now in like the struggle in the feel areas of the game, where you need to be able to read and react. And that's really where all these guys are having issues, decision-making. And I do wonder if after that draft, even Mark Williams picked up, I was trying to look it up. He wasn't an early player of the sport. He was a guy, you're big, start playing basketball. Oh, okay. I wonder if the Hornets do pivot away from like picking those toolsy late coming to the sport guys. You hope they can turn out like Giannis, where like, oh, they just tap into all the potential which they have in the world because they've got physical gifts and they've started playing the sport late. But that doesn't always, it's not always the case. Sometimes it just means that you've actually lost key development time and you will continue to be a little bit mechanical and an unnatural when playing the sport. But yeah, those guys need to play. If it's in Greensboro, fine. If it's in Charlotte, fine. But going forward this year, I know, Steve Clifford, you want to hold people accountable, but just for the fans to enjoy it, I think fans would enjoy losing these games, but being able to see these guys get some minutes and make baby steps along the season go, rather than seeing like a good night from Mason Plumlee or Kelly Oubre. So let's move those guys, get some draft assets of some sort, and let's open up some time. Mitch, you're in charge of that. That's my open letter to you, Mitch Kupchak, to do that and not give Steve Clifford a choice. Right, well, Chase, Matt, thanks a lot for coming on. Appreciate you taking the time, Matt, to come out, make time for us to come on the podcast. And we will speak to you soon.